The failure of drug war is glaringly obvious to judges, cops, wardens, prosecutors, and millions more now calling for decriminalization, legalization, the end of prohibition. Let us investigate the Century of Lies.
Hello, and welcome to Century of Lies. I'm your host, Doug McVeigh.
I'm Judy Chang. I'm the executive director of the International Network of People Who Use Drugs, and I've been in the role since 2017, I think. So, yeah, near the 5-year mark.
So now, first, let's start. Tell me about INPUD.
So basically, yeah, INPUD, we're a peer-based or peer-led network of people who use drugs. And yeah, basically, we're working to protect the health and defend the rights of people who use drugs globally, right? So we do a range of activities or actions. You know, we advocate at the UN level, so at the global policy level, and, you know, really trying to shift narratives and debates there, and push for decriminalization and legal reform. But also, yeah, we definitely like look into and advocate and lobby to be meaningfully engaged in, say, global guidelines, you know, that are to do with services for people who use drugs, that are to do with policies and practices. But, you know, we also stay connected to, you know, the community through our membership. We're accountable to the community. We have a regional membership model. So our membership, we move from an individual membership model to a regional, like, network organizational based model. So it basically covers, I guess, the whole world, all the regions, including the International Network of Women Who Use Drugs. So we also go into, like, say, we push for funding for peer-led, drug user-led networks. We go into consortiums and partnerships, and also, like, give out small grants to networks. And we also do, you know, technical assistance and capacity building also. But, you know, I think overall, a general description is, you know, we try and operate as a unified, united voice, you know, together to be able to, like, come together, have that legitimacy, and, you know, push for things that we want from, you know, our perspective.
And you are active in a lot of countries. I know the South Africa network, there's Latin America. How many countries are you active in?
Yeah, well, because our membership isn't, say, country networks, even though we do remain connected to them, our membership is the regional network. So the Latin American network of people who use drugs, you know, the North American network of people who use drugs, the European network of people who use drugs, the Eastern Europe and Central Asian network, the Middle East and North African region, network of people who use drugs, the African network of people who use drugs, the network of Asian people who use drugs, and the International Network of Women Who Use Drugs. And then, like, through that, the regional networks either have, like, individual membership models, or they have also kind of national network membership models. So we have this kind of, like, tiered approach to it, I guess, where but we try and, like, operate as much as possible, like, through the regional networks. But then when we're giving, say, small grants or, like, doing workshops, you know, they can be either at the regional level or at the national level. So yeah, we haven't actually counted specifically, like, how many national networks of people who use drugs, but, you know, there's a huge range, right, from South African network of people who use drugs, network in Nepal, network in the US, of course, networks in Canada, networks in Australia, all over Western Europe, and then also, you know, I think probably between 7 to 10 networks in the ECHA region, and, you know, also several in the sub-Saharan African region also. So, but it's something we've been aiming to do a bit of a mapping, right? And just to be able to, you know, have a map of seeing the, you know, the movement, basically, the global movement.
And it is literally a global movement. It's just, It's really exciting. I'm so glad to have you on the show. This is, I've been looking forward to this for so long. And there's so much I want to ask you about. I was writing up a list of topics. I mean, yeah, just, you know, page. Well, and then I saw the news release about this new project that you have, this Balancing the Scales. And this project encompasses a lot of what's on my list. So, I mean, you know, let's just start with that. I mean, this is, let's just jump right in. Please tell me about Balancing the Scales.
Sure. My dog's going. Well, basically we identified a need to address, right? And definitely, I think, you know, addressing mental health and well-being, you know, definitely became more and more of an issue due to COVID and the lockdowns, right? Especially as, you know, a lot of the community, you know, you lose your daily connections with people, whether it's with other peers or whether it's even through, you know, harm reduction services, because they can be also, you know, access to a broader community. So we wanted to address that, but we also, you know, we're very cognizant that, you know, the mental kind of health narrative, you know, hasn't always been very positive for people who use drugs, right? There's so much of a tendency to conflate, you know, mental health issues with, you know, conflate it with drug use and drug dependency, right? So this assumption that all people who use drugs, or especially people who are dependent on drugs, you know, have mental health problems. And, you know, because of the war on drugs, what that ends up doing is, you know, let's lock people away in treatment centers, right? Because they don't really know, you know, they don't really know what's good for them. They don't know their own minds, you know. We just, like, we're cognizant of the marrying of kind of mental health with the war on drugs, you know, can end up operating in quite damaging ways. And it ignores, you know, the agency element, the cognitive, you know, liberty element, or all those things. So, you know, we want to find a different ways to address, you know, well-being and mental health well-being, which of course is important for everyone. So basically, with the Balancing of Scales workshop, you know, this organization had come to us and we're like, oh, you know, there's this approach called Looking In, Looking Out that's been used and utilized within, I think it started with people living with HIV and LGBT communities, like also communities that, you know, have been marginalized and stigmatized and, you know, criminalized also in quite a few contexts. So this approach, like, really wanted to look at kind of tapping into the, you know, inner tools and resources, you know, we all have, right, to be able to empower ourselves to address our own, you know, mental health and well-being, but at the same time, like, do it in a community environment where you're, you know, connected to the community. But we also wanted to, like, look at approaches that can make people also stronger advocates in a lot of ways, and, you know, not only address, say, you know, self-stigma that prevents people from, you know, sometimes accessing health services, but also self-stigma that, you know, prevents us as people who use drugs to, you know, speak out and be really vocal about our rights, because, you know, self-stigma and externalized stigma has, you know, a full range of really damaging impacts on people. And especially, I think, also for, you know, drug user advocates and network leaders, you know, there's just been so much burnout and stress within the community also. And because of that, you know, we're looking for different tools and approaches and methodologies that could work. So we are, you know, very excited about this project. We started it just this year, you know, thanks to a fund that's called the Robert Carr Fund. And yeah, we started a pilot workshop in, like, the beginning of this year in January. Also at the same time, we're working on a manual on adapting it from this LILO approach. And from that, it became, like, Balancing the Scales. But Yeah, we also had a second workshop later in the year that was around training of facilitators, right? So it's not always like external facilitators that are, you know, the experts or doing things for us, but building, you know, that skill and capacity and knowledge of peers themselves to be the facilitators within their community so they can go on and, you know, also run these workshops. But it has been, you know, quite a, I think, transformative experience for a lot of the participants. And just see on our website, like some of the testimonials from people, because during the second workshop, we did, you know, just check in with people that attended the first workshop and wanted to see, like, you know, what changes have kind of happened in their life, you know, since the first workshop. And there were just, I think what was shared was beyond what I had even thought, you know, could be possible within, say, 3 months, right? People were sharing that they, you know, felt that it made them become a better father, you know, they had, or other people had adopted dogs. Other people felt that it had made them, you know, stronger advocates at the national level, and they felt that they were more able to speak up and, you know, push for the community needs. So it was like really quite incredible seeing all these different changes. I mean, from that, we also have, say, a WhatsApp group that's, you know, from people who use drugs all over the world. It's like super active. You know, sometimes it's just like checking in on everybody, right? Like, how's your day going, you know, etc. So it's also generated, I think, this sense of community connectedness also.
This is so brilliant. This is so brilliant stuff. I mean, it's the I was just talking with someone about some of this earlier today. In fact, the sort of twofold thing: people who are oppressed and who are the target of these laws start to internalize some of these things, and it's so necessary to get people to get past that. And then there are the prohibitionists, the people who are making these stupid laws, who will sit there with their glass of scotch and they'll maybe down their aspirin in the morning with their coffee, and they'll smoke a cigarette, and then they'll talk about all of us who are using drugs, all of us bad people using drugs. Hell, I was just looking at a document from the UNODC, which funny as heck, health harms of drugs in the context of other psychoactive substances, and they've got tobacco, many millions of deaths, risk factor 8.7, alcohol use, millions and millions of deaths, risk factor 2.4, drug use, yeah, several million deaths, risk factor 0.5. It's that weird kind of the way that tobacco and alcohol, we won't call those drugs. What? Ah, it's the hypocrisy that just... Sorry, that's a rant.
No, that totally makes sense. I mean, part of it also in this workshop that, you know, we wanted to bring into the manual in the workshop and into the process was, you know, how do we as criminalized and stigmatized communities also like build positive identities, like not just despite our drug use or our drug dependency, but, you know, linked to that, right? Because there are lots of also, I think, positive aspects that we, you know, because society is always trying to invisibilize, remain hidden, like, you know, we learn to think, okay, you know, being, you know, using daily or being drug dependent, you know, that's somehow linked to a deficit, right? We get so used to society saying that. So, you know, we also wanted to use this process on, you know, building a positive drug user identity around that. And not only looking at drug use, but, you know, some of the survival skills that I think we do engender, you know, from because of the global war on drugs, you know, I think we do have to recognize, like, amongst the community, like, how many of us are, I think, true survivors of really bad drug policies, right? And survivors of, like, being hated and, you know, judged by the rest of the world. And, you know, I think that does create resilience in a lot of ways. You know, I just think with the community, I think there's so many things that we've all survived that I think, you know, other people wouldn't necessarily. And I think in some ways, you know, in most ways, you know, we have to celebrate that, you know, and learn to be able to celebrate it as well.
This is an interview with Judy Chang, executive director of the International Network of People Who Use Drugs. We'll have more in a moment.
Sometimes the grievances of people are extend more than just the law, extend to a whole mode of arbitrary power, a whole mode of arbitrary exercise of arbitrary power. And that's what we have here. We have an autocracy which runs this university. It's managed. We were told the following. If President Kerr actually tried to get something more liberal out of the regents in his telephone conversations, why didn't he make some public statement to that effect? And the answer we received from a well-meaning liberal was the following. He said, would you ever imagine the manager of a firm making a statement publicly in opposition to his board of directors? That's the answer. Well, I ask you to consider, if this is a firm, and if the Board of Regents are the Board of Directors, and if President Kerr, in fact, is the manager, and I tell you something, the faculty are a bunch of employees, and we're the raw materials, but we're a bunch of raw materials that don't mean to be have any process upon us, don't mean to be made into any product, don't mean to end up being bought by some clients of the university, be they the government, be they industry, be they organized labor, be they anyone. We're human beings. And that brings me to the second mode of civil disobedience. There's a time when the operation of the machine becomes so odious, makes you so sick at heart, that you can't take part. You can't even passively take part. And you've got to put your bodies upon the gears and upon the wheels, upon the levers, upon all the apparatus, and you've got to make it stop. And you've got to indicate to the people who run it, to the people who own it, that unless you're free, the machine will be prevented from working at all.
You're listening to Century of Lies. I'm your host, Doug McVeigh. You may be listening to this as a podcast. You might have gotten it as a direct download. You might be listening on a streaming service. You might, on the other hand, be hearing this on one of the community radio stations that broadcast this show. This is actually a show produced for radio, a volunteer production for radio, distributed through the Pacifica Foundation Radio Network's Audio Port Service. And the thing I love about radio is that I don't know who's going to hear this. I mean, it could be anybody could randomly turn their dial and end up hearing us talking right now. They didn't have any thought about drug policy. They weren't thinking about people who use drugs. They're just going about their day, tuning in to see what's happening in the world or maybe listen to music, but they're, whoops, got the wrong station. But it's, you know, it's kind of neat, and that's which is one of the reasons I'm really glad to have you on here, because there are some things that are so basic, but I think it's really important to get straight, because I have this bad habit of I'll use jargon, I'll use acronyms and abbreviations, and I know what they mean, and I forget that maybe people don't always know that don't know those that jargon, don't know those acronyms and even in concepts. I mean, when we talk about things like we talk about people who use drugs, and we talk about stigma and the person first language and some of these things. I mean, generally, I think people understand the idea, but how it actually comes to play, you know, where the rubber meets the road, as it were, what stigma really means, is I think it's some. It's again one of the reasons I'm so grateful to have you on here, because I think people out there in the world really need to hear what this is important stuff. I think this is really important stuff. The work you're doing is tremendously important, and I'm just really, really grateful to you for it. Could you talk a little more about stigma? Actually, this sort of it's like I say, it's we talk around it, we hear about it, but I mean, hell, in the late 90s, my government's Health and Human Services Department even produced a massive book, Changing the Conversation, talking all about stigma and how we needed to move away from stigmatizing language and move away from these outmoded concepts. And I think that they then put that report in a trash bin when the next administration came in. But could you talk a bit more about stigma? and the overcoming stigma in terms of developing self-advocacy?
Yeah, I think starting with stigma, right? We talk a lot about stereotypes and judgment. And so obviously, you know, the stereotypes and judgment around drug use are very pejorative, right? And there's just this, you know, this sense that as soon as you use drugs, as soon as you're dependent on drugs, you know, people perceive it as like a waste of a life, right? You cannot be, you know, productive in society. You know, I think all the kind of worst perceptions of people or labels are kind of like tied to drug use and drug dependency, right? They suddenly paint you as like the opposite of, I don't know, the ideal man, woman in a neoliberal society, right? It's the perception of being disordered, irrational, criminal, you know, immoral, you know, all these things. So, you know, of course that in itself is bad, but in terms of thinking, like, I think people sometimes don't think about, okay, well, what are like the real lived impacts, you know, of stigma? And I think for a lot of us, you know, you end up self-isolating, you know, yourself as well, and socially isolating yourself. At the same time, whilst other people are doing it to you, but, you know, it's this kind of like vicious cycle, right? You know, when we talk about stigma and discrimination, you know, within healthcare, you know, people are not accessing services, not just because of like self-stigma, because we talk about people thinking, okay, maybe I don't deserve the access to health, but I think what people don't really think about is within like stigma discrimination within healthcare centers, like how badly people who use drugs are treated within, you know, an industry that's supposed to be all about care, right? Like we're so often denied treatment, medical treatment, services, you know, turned away, you know, all these, you know, all these kind of impacts. And of course, you know, that has a huge public health impact. I mean, you know, stigma, the impacts of stigma also, of course, extend to employment. They extend to education. You know, once people are outed or exposed for drug use, you know, they can be fired from their job, kicked out of school, you know, which has obviously, a range of kind of impacts like down the road. I think people don't generally like think about, you know, what happens to people, right? I mean, if we look at, you know, stigma surrounding drug use, I mean, it leads to deaths, right? Because of stigma, like people are using alone, especially women who use drugs, who often face double, you know, triple stigma. So you end up using alone, which of course, like, especially in, you know, a really dangerous drug market at times, you know, leads to overdose. And I think, yeah, that we fail to kind of consider all the implications of stigma also.
And it's the perception too. I mean, it doesn't matter what a person's personal behavior might be. It's what that authority figure decides, like, oh, you people are all this, you people. I mean, it's really maddening and frustrating. And so, which actually leads me to this, that we're recording this a few days before the UN's Drug Day. They released their World Drug Report, and before an annual event that's been going on for the last few years called Support Don't Punish, every June 26th, the Support Don't Punish Day of Action. And by the time this airs, it will have come and gone. But the concept, the basic political organizing, that nothing about us without us, these policies that support people rather than punishing.
Yeah. So just in terms of support, don't punish as well. I think quite a few networks have also changed it to self-support, don't punish. Also, right? Just because I think it's also about, you know, that empowerment aspect as well that we really want to promote in community organizing, and nothing about us without us, you know, not not all of us like need support, right? There's certain times in our life when we need support. There's other times when, you know, we actually don't need support. We need actually respect, right? And we don't, I think with people who use drugs and because of the stigma, there's this idea that, you know, we all have to have our lives intervened on, right? That if someone's found to use drugs, there has to be, you know, an intervention, even if it's a brief therapeutic intervention. But, you know, a lot of what we do, we're like countering that and saying, well, that's not true, right? Like it's the external world that has to, you know, respect, protect and fulfill our rights, that has to also, you know, recognize the right of bodily autonomy and cognitive liberty, and, you know, that the majority of us are not not harming anybody else. We're not, we don't play into the stereotypes that society have of us, right? There's this idea that, you know, you just go into this spiral of decline and, you know, you need to stop drug use to be considered a member of society. So I think a lot of our demands are about, well, it's the external world that needs to change, not necessarily, you know, us, ourselves.
And some of these are things that should be so obvious to people. I mean, the stigma and we understand bullying. We understand when you call a person names, if people, you know, when a parent calls their kid bad names, the kid's going to eventually, they're going to internalize that. They're going to think, I must be that because my parents, you know, the authorities are telling me this. And what you were saying, the self-support, is that paternalistic thing about empowering people and we're giving voice to people? It's like, no, they had power. They have voices. It's just that people aren't listening. And so maybe helping to amplify them, maybe helping people to empower themselves. And that is, I think that is that. Ah!
Yeah,
I'm so bloody articulate, but I'm just really, this is just really cool.
Well, just part of the movement is, you know, demanding our rights, right? Because they're inherent and they were always ours. It's just that, you know, some point in history with the global war on drugs, they were taken away. So yeah, that's part of what our movement is about. And also, yeah, nothing about us without us is basically, yeah, demanding a seat at the table on any decisions, on any policies, programs or practices that impact our lives. Not only is a right to political participation, but also if you have involvement of people who use drugs or, you know, any other group you're designing policies at the time for, that you will have better policies and programs, like if you involve the people that it's designed for, right? And also research. We also ask that, you know, in researchers, the academic world, that there's more involvement of, you know, lived and living experience in that, because otherwise it's just completely removed, right, from the actual person. I don't think you can ever design like good policies and programs or research without actually listening, you know, to the people that it pertains to.
That was part one of my interview with Judy Chang, executive director of the International Network of People Who Use Drugs. You can find Input on the web at input.net. That's INPUD.net. We'll hear the rest of that conversation on next week's show. For now, that's it. Thank you for joining us. This is Doug McVeigh saying so long. So long! For the Drug Truth Network, this is Doug McVeigh asking you to examine our policy of drug prohibition, the century of lies. Drug Truth Network programs archived at the James A. Baker III Institute for Public Policy.